Discerning Hearts presents The Ascent of Mount Carmel by St. John of the Cross, translated by David Lewis and read by Ed Humpel. Book 1, Chapter 12, which treats of the answer to another question, explaining what the desires are that suffice to cause the evils.
I might have entered at greater length on the night of sense according to the extent of evil which the desires occasion, not only in the way described, but in many others as well. But this is enough for my purpose, because it is now clear why the mortification of them is called night, and how necessary it is to enter into this night in order to draw near unto God. One thing only remains for discussion before I speak of the way by which this night is entered upon, and so conclude this book, namely, a doubt which might be suggested to the reader by the matter in hand. It might be asked, in the first place, whether any desire be enough to produce in the soul these positive and negative evils of which I have spoken, and in the second place, whether any desire, however slight and of whatever kind, be enough to produce all of these evils together, or whether each desire produces a distinct evil, as one desire weariness, another pain, and another darkness. To this I reply as follows. In the first place, if we are speaking of the negative evil, which consists in the soul's being deprived of God, it is only those voluntary desires which are the matter of mortal sin that can and do result in this. For these rob the soul in this life of grace, and in the next of glory, which is the fruition of God. And in the second place, that these desires, which are the matter of mortal sin, and those voluntary desires, which are the matter of venial sin, and those which are imperfections, are every one of them enough to inflict on the soul the positive evils. These evils, though in one sense negative, are here called positive, because they correspond to a turning towards the creature, as the negative evils correspond to a turning away from God. There is, however, this difference. Those desires which are the matter of mortal sin produce complete blindness, pain, impureness, and weakness. But those other desires, matter of venial sin or known imperfection, do not produce these evils in this perfect and supreme degree, seeing that they do not cast the soul out of the state of grace. For the loss of grace is concurrent with their dominion over the soul, because their life consists in the death of grace. Still, they occasion somewhat of these evils, though, but remissly, proportional to the weakness and remissness which they generate in the soul. So that the particular desire which most weakens the soul is most fruitful in pain, blindness, and impureness. But it is to be remarked that, though every desire generates all these evils, which we here call positive, there are some which chiefly and directly produce particular evils, and other evils incidentally. For though it is true that one sensual desire produces all these evils, yet its chief and proper fruit is the defilement of soul and body. Though one avaricious desire also produces all these evils, yet its principal and direct result is trouble. Though one vainglorious desire, precisely like the rest, produces all these evils, yet its chief and immediate effect is darkness and blindness. And, though one gluttonous desire issues in the same evils, yet still its primary direct result is weakness in those things that pertain to virtue. This may be said of all other desires. The reason why any act of voluntary desire produces all these evils in the soul together is that contrariety which subsists directly between it and those acts of virtue which result in opposite effects. As an act of virtue produces and generates in the soul sweetness, peace, consolation, light, pureness, and fortitude together, so an unruly desire begets pain, fatigue, weariness, blindness, and weakness. All virtues increase by the practice of each. so also vices thrive and grow, and their effects are magnified in the soul in the same way. Though all these evils are not visible when the desire is gratified, because the satisfaction thereof furnishes at the time no opportunity for them, yet afterwards the evil results become clearly visible. For the desire, when it is fulfilled, is sweet and appears good, but afterwards the effects thereof are found to be bitter, which is the experience of everyone who has suffered himself to be led away thereby. I am not ignorant, however, that there are some so blind and so insensible as to not feel this. They do not walk in the ways of God, and therefore see not that which hinders their drawing near unto Him. I am not speaking here of those other natural desires which are involuntary, nor of thoughts which do not go beyond the first movements, nor of other temptations to which we consent not, because none of these produce any of the evils I describe. Though a person liable to these trials may imagine that the passion and disturbance thus occasioned darken and defile his soul, in reality it is not so. Yea, rather the contrary effects are sometimes the result of them. Because, in proportion to the resistance offered, such as one gains strength, pureness, light, consolation, and many other good things, according to the words of our Lord to St. Paul, virtue is made perfect in infirmity. But voluntary desires produce these and more evils. For this cause the chief solicitude of spiritual directors is to mortify the desires of their penitents, and to make them deny themselves in all that is pleasing to them, so as to deliver them from so great misery.
Book 1, Chapter 13, wherein is described the manner and way which the soul must follow in order to enter this night of sense.
It now remains for me to give some directions by which the soul may be able to enter on this night of sense. Ordinarily, the soul enters in two ways on this night. One is the active way, the other is the passive. The active way is that by which the soul is able to make, and does make, efforts of its own to enter in, assisted by divine grace. Of this I shall speak in the instructions that follow. The passive way is that in which the soul doeth nothing as of itself, neither does it make therein any efforts of its own, but it is God who works in it, giving special aids, and the soul is, as it were, patient, freely consenting thereto. Of this I shall speak when treating of the obscure night, when I shall have to describe those who are beginners, and as I shall have then to give many counsels to such, with reference to the many imperfections to which they are liable on this road, I shall not enlarge on that question now. Besides, this is not the place to do so, for I am now concerned only with the reasons why this journey is called night, with the nature and divisions of the same. But as it seems a defect, and not so profitable as it should be, to abstain here from furnishing some help or instructions proper for this night of the desires, I have determined to lay down the brief instruction following. I shall adopt the same course at the conclusion of each of these divisions, or causes of this night, of which, by the help of our Lord, I undertake to speak. These instructions for the subduing of our desires are, in my opinion, though brief and few, as profitable and effectual as they are brief. He who will reduce them to practice will need none others, for they include everything. 1. Be continually careful and earnest in imitating Christ in everything, conforming thyself to his life. For this end thou must meditate thereon, that thou mayest know how to imitate it, and conduct thyself in all things as he would have done himself. 2. To do this well, every satisfaction offered to the senses, which is not for God's honor and glory, must be renounced and rejected for the love of Jesus Christ, who in this life had, and sought, no other pleasure than doing the will of his Father, which was his meat, as he tells us himself. For instance, if the pleasure of listening to anything which tends not to the service of God presents itself, seek not that pleasure, neither give ear to what is said. If thou art offered the sight, pleasurable in itself, of things which do not tend to God's honor, seek not that pleasure, and abstain from that sight. Do the same also in conversation and every other commerce of society. Practice the same mortification with respect to the other senses, as far as possible. And if it be not possible, it will be enough not to seek the pleasure that is offered. Thus the mortification of the senses and the absence of all pleasure must be striven after, so that the soul may be as in darkness. The practice of this counsel will bring with it great profit in a short time. In order to mortify and calm the four natural passions of joy, hope, fear, and grief, from the concord and tranquility of which result these and other great advantages, the following instructions are a perfect means of great merit and the source of great virtues. Strive always not after that which is most easy, but that which is most difficult. Not after that which is most pleasant, but that which is most unpleasant. Not after that which giveth pleasure, but after that which giveth none. Not after that which is consoling, but that which is afflictive. Not after great things, but after little things. Not after that which is elevated and precious, but after that which is vile and despised. Strive not to desire anything, but rather nothing. Seek not after that which is better, but that which is worse, and desire to be detached from all things, empty and poor for Christ's sake. This state is to be embraced with a perfect heart, and the will must conform thereto. Because if our heart be truly engaged herein, we shall in a short time attain to great joy and consolation, doing our work orderly with discretion. These instructions, well acted upon, are sufficient for our entrance on the night of sense. But still, out of the abundance of the matter, I will give another method of devotion, which teaches us how to mortify truly the desire of honor, from which so many others proceed. 1. Do those things which bring thee into contempt, and desire that others may also do them. 2. Speak disparagingly of thyself, and contrive that others may do so too. 3. Think humbly and contemptuously of thyself, and desire that others may do so also. I think it fitting, in conclusion, to insert here certain instructions for ascending to the summit of Mount Carmel, which is the high estate of union. Though the doctrine they contain is spiritual and interior, it relates also to the spirit of imperfection in sensible and exterior things, which may be met in the two roads on either side of the way of perfection. We shall, therefore, take these sentences in this sense, namely, as referring to sensible things, and afterwards, in the second division of the night, we shall take them as referring to that which is spiritual. 1. That thou mayest have pleasure in everything, seek pleasure in nothing. 2. That thou mayest know everything, seek to know nothing. 3. That thou mayest possess all things, seek to possess nothing. 4. That thou mayest be everything, seek to be nothing. 5. That thou mayest attain to that of which thou hast no present perception, thou must walk there where thou hast no perception. 6. that thou mayest attain to that thou knowest not, thou must go through that thou knowest not. 7. That thou mayest attain to that thou possessest not, thou must go through that thou possessest not. 8. That thou mayest attain to that which thou art not, thou must go through that which thou art not. Instructions how not to impede the All. 1. When thou dwellest upon anything, thou hast ceased to cast thyself upon the All. 2. Because in order to arrive from All to the All, thou hast to deny thyself wholly in All. 3. And when thou comest to attain the All, thou must keep it without desiring anything. 4. Because if thou wilt keep anything with the All, thou hast not thy treasure simply in God. In detachment the spirit finds quiet and repose, for coveting nothing, nothing wearies it by elation, and nothing oppresses it by dejection, because it stands in the center of its own humility. For as soon as it covets anything, it is immediately fatigued thereby.